It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This summer is a little bit different, but it's still a great time to explore and learn new things. Every Tuesday on Talk of Iowa, it's Talk of Iowa Summer Camp. Today, jazz camp. Of course, we can't ask you to bring your axe in to jam with some friends, or in non-jazz lingo, we can't ask you to bring in your instrument to play some music, but we do have three honorary camp counselors who are going to introduce you to some of the greatest jazz music of all time and tell you why you might want to spend more time exploring this truly American art form. Later in the hour, I'll talk with Damani Phillips, Director of Jazz Studies at the University of Iowa, and Tony Lefevre, founder and leader of the Iowa Women's Jazz Orchestra. But first, Roger Maxwell. He was one of the founding members of the jazz program at the University of Northern Iowa. He was a music teacher, conductor, and chief arranger for the U.S. Army Band of the Pacific for a time. He is author of 14 Weeks to a Better Band and other instructional books that have sold more than 700,000 copies. And even with all of that, he dedicated the bulk of his career to fighting for civil rights. But today, we are going to focus on jazz. Roger Maxwell, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you so much. My interest in the big band era, and that's where I'm interested in, was started in the early 1940s. And I had a chance to meet the various jazz composers and big band, Duke Ellington, Stan Kenton, Jimmy Dorsey, Gene Krupa,
wow,
Lionel Hampton, Maynard Ferguson. They were such cordial people to talk with. And I said, you know, why is your band so unique? And it all depended upon the size of the band. The big bands of that era, they were composed of usually three to five saxophones, one to four trombones, one to four trumpets, and a rhythm section, piano, bass, and drum. And each band had its own unique sound. These bands played throughout Iowa in the Electric Park Park in Waterloo.
Yeah, Electric Park Ballroom, the Surf Ballroom. We had some amazing ballrooms all around the state, didn't we?
Oh, yeah, we sure had some good places where these bands played. And it was so a delight to sit there in front of the band, not sit, but just stand there in front of the band and listen to them play. So in the big bands, we had bands here even in Iowa playing music. Vance Dixon, Dave Townsend from Waterloo, Eddie Allen from Ames, Doc Lawson from Marshalltown. And so anyway, there's something about a big band sound which gets in your spirit.
You grew up in Marshalltown, Iowa, and I think a lot of people might be surprised to learn that all of these great jazz musicians, I mean, so many of them did come and play in Iowa. I want to know when you first started playing. You started on the trombone?
Yeah, I started on the trombone. I went to UNI, and we were the first in the country to have a student band from a university or college. And later on, I'd written a jazz book, and we introduced it to four Japanese cities, Takasaki, Shimizu, Hama, Matsu, and Kofu. And those students here and adults just loved jazz music.
Well, you know, Roger, I think we need to play a little bit of music, and you have picked some songs to share today. And the first one we're going to listen to, and you can tell us why we're listening to it in a moment, but we're going to listen to Sarah Vaughan's The Nearness of You.
It's not the pale moon that excites me, that thrills and delights me. It's just the nearness of you. It isn't your sweet conversation that brings this sensation. Oh, just the nearness of you.
Oh, let me tell you, I first heard that in Dayton, Ohio, at my sister Andrew's brother-in-law's home. They had a record, and I listened to it over and over, and they gave me the record. Sarah Vaughan singing that song is love. It's the same love and feeling that a grandparent has seen a grandchild for the first time. It gets in your spirit.
Yeah.
And that's what that song did for me. And it's doing it the same thing at this moment.
I can hear that. I can hear that, Roger. When we listen to jazz music, I can tell that for you, it moves you on a very deep level. If someone is new to jazz, do you have advice for how to listen?
No, just absorb the sound and the lyrics of the music, just like we listen to Over the Rainbow, or It Might as Well Be Spring. Beautiful compositions of love. It happened again on another level with me. Is Charles Carroll was on the road again. He was down in Mississippi interviewing a former slave, gentleman about 90 years old, sitting on a porch about two steps going up to that level where he was sitting. And at the bottom of the stairs must have been his great-granddaughter. Charles Carroll said, "Sir, how have you been able to survive all the problems that you had as a slave? How did you survive?" He looked down and said, "Girl," he didn't call her by name, he said, "Girl, sing Amazing Grace." And she said, "Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound." That's one of those songs that got in my spirit. So that's the jazz that this kind of music has done for me and countless others, thousands of people. That's what jazz means. It's in the spirit of love. It's just, as I said, it's like seeing that grandchild for the first time and hugging that baby.
Let's listen to a little bit of Duke Ellington. This is Take the A Train. Bit of Take the A Train.
Oh,
Roger,
yeah.
Why did you pick Take the A Train? Why do you want us to listen to that?
Well, it's just the rhythm of it and the melody. It's such a remembered melody you recall. And Duke wrote that as his theme song. And so anyway, Duke Ellington was always very special to me. He was performing at the Armory at Iowa State University. And I hitchhiked from UNI, at Iowa State Teachers College, got a ride, had no idea where I was when I arrived at Ames. I walked and walked, somebody said, "At the Armory." I walked and I walked, but I finally arrived at the Armory. And so anyway, I went backstage there and met some of the musicians. And I talked to the trumpet player and violinist named Ray Nance. I said, "Nance, are you going to use me tonight?" And Ray said, "Hell no, ain't using no music tonight." I thought, how can a musician play without music? But he had memorized all the Duke Ellington music. Well, after the concert, I had no idea where we were going. The band was going to play at the Memorial Union. And I thought, I didn't even know what Memorial Union is. So I saw the band, a bus, and I said, "I wonder if I could ride with you fellas." "Just get on the bus, son, get on the bus."
Wow.
So I got on the bus, and we rolled to the Union. And Louis Belson, he was a drummer from Rock Island, and he played the bass drums. His two drums rolled just like a drummer would play cadence of a snare drum. So anyway, we got there, and to make a long story short, Duke came, and he said, "Stand here, son." And so I was right there, right, I could touch him as he played here. And he said, are you enjoying the music? I said, I am.
That's wonderful. Roger, we are out of time, but we're going to go out with Intermission Riff by Stan Kenton. And before we listen to that, why don't you tell us what we should be listening for?
How they start out with the band here, the melody and how the different sections come in later, trombones come in, then the trumpet sections come in. So that's what constitutes the intermission riff, hearing those different instruments come in at the same, at different times here. And Stan Kenton was, he's such a fine man. And as we sign off, I have to tell you about, I took students over to the former Parson College in Fairfield to hear Stan. And I went backstage here, and I met him. He said, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm teaching in Southern Iowa, and I give music lessons to 113 students every week, private lessons. 5 years later, Stan was playing at Electric Park Ballroom. Somebody said, Stan, ask about you. I said, not me, Roger May. He said, yeah. So Stan looked down, and I walked down. There was a parting of the sea, and people went down. And they made a way for me to walk down. Stan, he was 6 foot four. He bent down and said, Roger, are you still giving 113 lessons a week? True story. Okay.
Oh, wow. Well, Roger Maxwell, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
A little bit of Intermission Riff by Stan Kenton. Roger Maxwell, he was one of the founding members of the jazz program at the University of Northern Iowa, a music teacher. He wrote 14 Weeks to a Better Band and other instructional books that have helped teach students now for many years, hundreds of thousands of students. It's Jazz Camp on Talk of Iowa today, and we will continue in a moment. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It is Talk of Iowa Summer Camp. Today, Jazz Camp. And my next guest is Damani Phillips. He's a saxophone player and director of jazz studies and associate professor for African American Studies at the University of Iowa. He's also the author of What Is This Thing Called Soul? Damani, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me back again, huh?
Now, just a few minutes ago, I was talking with Roger Maxwell about jazz, and he was talking about how it's, for him, it's so incredibly moving, emotionally moving to listen to jazz music. And I personally think that jazz is easy to love, but I also think it's important to understand where it comes from. So can you give us just a brief history about how jazz developed, where it started?
Yeah, from my purview, or as best I can put together, New Orleans is universally regarded as kind of the epicenter where the music comes together. And that was kind of a unique society within the United States in that, you know, the French owned that territory, and then they sold it to Spain, and Spain gave it back to France. So the interaction between the races in New Orleans was a bit different than it has historically been throughout the rest of the country. So lots of commingling, procreation, marriage was completely legal. And in those interactions, we see the African-American culture and European culture mixing together. And so a big part of what makes jazz jazz, or where it gets its beginnings, is this this kind of unique mixture of European and African musical elements that all come together in just the right way to come up with the style of music we have come to know and love called jazz.
And it is a truly American art form, which I think is a special thing. This grew out of our country, and it's, although it's beloved around the world, it's something that is unique to hear.
Yeah, definitely. This is, you know, one of the earliest forms of music that is, you know, unquestionably and conclusively linked to the United States of America. You know, again, I'm always a big advocate of complete truth and disclosure, in that, You know, yes, it is an American thing, and it was homegrown on, you know, on our soil. But at the same time, you know, the unique recipe that has come to be known as jazz is, you know, largely an African American invention. And it's, you know, in stating that it's American, it's important that we not lose sight of the fact that that is conclusively the case if you look at the music very closely and very carefully and from the cultural standpoint.
Right, an African-American art form, and of course it has grown, and people of all different backgrounds perform jazz and participate in jazz, but this is where it started. And I think it's important to mention also that early white musicians took a lot of credit for jazz, and credit wasn't given where credit was due for a long time. So I think that is a very important part of the story.
Yeah, and that credit is the important part. And again, you're right, it is a worldwide phenomenon now, and there are people of all ethnicities and all cultures and all countries, all corners of the earth who are practicing it. But, you know, it's, you know, give credit where credit is due in terms of its, you know, the incubation and birth of that music and the people who were the primary contributors in making it happen.
Jazz is an interesting art form because that term jazz encompasses so many different kinds of music. And we're going to play some jazz music in here in a moment. And you picked three songs that could not be more different, but they're all under that umbrella of jazz. So, gosh, yeah. If we had to define it, how would we define it?
Well, you know, I mean, that is, it's, I think if there's any one thing that is its biggest strength, but at the same time, its biggest weakness, it would be that there are, you know, so many things that label can be attached to. And, you know, whether that label being attached is just or not is up for debate. But, you know, you were mentioning to me earlier about what your prior guest, Mr. Maxwell, said about that emotionally moving character or nature to the music. I think that in many respects, you know, that's something that's common amongst pretty much all the styles of music that come from African American culture. It carries those characteristics. That's part of how it is evaluated as effective or not. But I think of all those styles of music that are put together in a purely instrumental fashion, jazz is by and large the most sophisticated kind of recipe that we've come up with, and there is a emotive nature to it that you are hard pressed to find in any other style of music on the planet. And I think that if there's one thing that separates it from the rest of the pack, it's that. You know, wonderfully complex, but if the music is doing what it's supposed to do, the complexity of it melts away, and you're left with that emotional expression that need to, you know, communicate in a very personal, you know, very effective way. And that's just, jazz is one of those styles of music where, you know, that has been achieved, you know, throughout the past century, and, you know, continues to separate it from many other styles of music that we have come to know and love around the planet today.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of jazz. Let's listen to West End Blues by Louis Armstrong. Just a little bit of West End Blues by Louis Armstrong. And Damani, why did you choose that song today? What do you want us to hear?
Particularly from that earlier portion of the music's history, you know, there is no voice that is more potent and more personal than Louis Armstrong. And as the music found its way, you know, the ability of the musicians to create that ethos was, you know, at the top of the list priority. And, you know, there are few people in the history of the music who you know, were able to achieve that. And that's why, you know, we have these luminaries that we know and love and enjoy and we know about. But more than anything else, it's one of those things where it's so uniquely personal and potent that you couldn't copy that if you wanted to. So uniquely tied to the moment that it couldn't be reproduced, you know, on the fly by anyone. When you hear that, you know exactly who it is. He managed to carve out that kind of a unique niche. And the music was completely supportive and receptive to that. In fact, the music thrived on that kind of individuality. And if there's, you know, there's no very few voices in the history of the music that are as potent as Louis Armstrong.
Well, that's so interesting that you say that. A couple of weeks ago, we did a classical music camp on Talk of Iowa, and we were talking about how one of the definitions of classical music is that it has been written down, and that you could give this piece of paper, these collections of papers, to another group of musicians, and they could recreate that music just as it was intended to be played. Jazz is different. I mean, you can get jazz music and you can play the notes on the page, but part of what makes it special is that it is alive and evolving all the time, right?
Well, it's the fact that it is uniquely tied to the moment when it's being created. That's the separator. So him being in that studio on that day with that group of musicians allowed that recording to come to take shape. If he had he recorded that very same tune the next day, it would be something completely different. So it's always in a state of constant evolution and constant, got a life of its own that attaches to the moment, to the needs of the player, to the expressive needs of the performer, as opposed to the classical music side of it, where it's really about the expressive needs of the composer and the musicians are executing that expressive will as best they possibly can. That's its power, its openness and receptiveness to that, and the fact that it provides a conduit where you can share those most intimate and vulnerable thoughts and feelings with the people in front of you. There's very few styles of music on the planet that let the performer do that.
Damani, when did you fall in love with jazz music?
Well, weirdly enough, I didn't love jazz. I was a classical saxophone player for many, many years. I went to school and got a master's degree in it, and I thought for a moment that that was going to be what I was going to, you know, that would be what I was going to do for a living, is teach classical saxophone. But by chance, I got the opportunity to play with a blues band in front of a live audience, and something clicked in terms of that performance and this very electricity I'm talking about with the people in the room who are listening, and the, you know, the ability to, you know, openly express in the moment. You know, I think that opportunity came along at just the right time in my life where I was ready to receive it, and it absolutely changed my life and completely changed the direction of music that I was going to pursue. That was just in, 2000 or so.
Wow. So really not that long ago. So when you had that was an experience that you had as a performer, and that made you love performing the music. Did it also alter what you wanted to listen to?
Well, of course, because if there's a thing about being a musician, part of your struggle and part of your journey is to understand whatever music it is that you're choosing to play as intimately and as, you know, deeply as you possibly can. And it was a foregone conclusion that if I wanted to understand music, I had to immerse myself in listening to it so that I understood how it was being channeled through other players who I respected and revered, and who I revered. I dived in headfirst into the world of jazz and slowly but surely started to develop an understanding of the playing of these great players in the music until I could start to carve out a sense of my own voice.
Let's listen to another song that you've selected today. Let's listen to a little bit of So What by Miles Davis, and this was from his legendary album Kind of Blue. Thank you. just a little bit of So What by Miles Davis. I think that's a gateway for so many people into the world of jazz. They listen to that album and then they just want more. Why did you want us to listen to that today, Damani?
Yeah, people would probably think, whoa, he did it because of the popularity of the album. And in some way I did. But my reason for picking this tune is actually a little bit different than just the music that's, or the musicians that are on it. It's really about what it did for the spread of the music. It's, he did something that I think we need to be considering very carefully in 2020. He found a way to make the music accessible to people. It is an olive branch to all listeners, the average everyday person, and the person who's already got experience and has a vested interest in the music. And that's something that I strive to do myself in the music that I create. But I think we've forgotten about the need to do that somewhat in modern day jazz.
So it's welcoming. And if you haven't listened to any other jazz, would you suggest starting with Kind of Blue?
That by far is my number one suggestion to people. There's something on that album that most people can vibe with.
It sounds like you're also saying that if you listen to that album again and again, you're going to hear something new every time you listen to it, because there are depths there that you won't be able to explore on that first listen.
Yeah, there's a lot to it. And weirdly enough, I think the best teachers, the best motivators in our lives are those people who transmit, intensely complicated concepts without you even realizing just how complex that thought was that was being shared with you. But at the same time, you get it.
Damani, before we go, junior high is a time where a lot of kids who play in a band and maybe don't have a whole lot of musical experience, it's a time when they get to explore being in a jazz band. And I know for some kids it can be a little bit scary because they are asked to do a little improvisation and really do new things. Why would you recommend that kids in band give jazz a try?
Well, it's a style of music that lets you discover you. It's not overly reliant on, learned skill. It lets you open yourself up and share with people. It lets you get in touch with what's on your mind and what's in your heart and learn to express it in a way that is understandable by all people. And I know that vulnerability makes people a little bit anxious, but consider the fact that the other part of the music that is beautiful is that errors happen all the time. So it's not a thing where it has to be pinpoint perfect. If you listen to, outtakes from people like Miles Davis, these greats in the music, there's all kinds of mistakes happening. In fact, on that song that we just heard right there, there's cracked notes in the middle of those solos. And in the, in the musician world, that's considered to be a mistake. But, on the jazz side of it, we'll excuse all that in the interest of hearing what it is you have to say. So embrace that vulnerability that the music expects from us.
Damani, we're out of time, but we're going to go out listening to Retrograde by Daryl Reeves. What do you want us to hear in this music?
Well, this song is a bit of a reimagining of the music and kind of repackaging itself or repurposing itself so that what you're hearing is a little closer connected to the kinds of music that we're hearing on a regular basis in 2020. But the spirit of the music is just the same as it was on So What and just the same as it was on Western Blues.
Well, Damani Phillips, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
That's Retrograde by Daryl Reeves. I was talking with Damani Phillips. He's a saxophone player and director of jazz studies and associate professor of African American studies at the University of Iowa. He's also the author of What Is This Thing Called Soul? You're listening to Talk of Iowa Summer Camp. Today, the subject is jazz. We'll continue in a moment. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa Summer Camp, and today, Jazz Camp. Our final camp counselor of the day is trumpet player Toni Lefevre. She is founder and leader of the Iowa Women's Jazz Orchestra. She's also a middle school band teacher at LaSalle Middle School in Cedar Rapids. Toni, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
When did you first fall in love with jazz music?
Well, I started playing trumpet when I was in sixth grade, and I think I started my jazz education as an eighth grader, and it's just a genre that I really fell in love with as a trumpet player, and I'm really happy to see that my education has and my abilities as an educator have allowed me to continue excelling in this genre and bringing it to a variety of other people.
For a lot of young musicians, I think really one of their first encounters with jazz music is jazz band in middle school or junior high. What did you love about playing that music that made you want more?
Well, I like the smaller atmosphere of the ensemble, and you really get close with the people that you perform with when you're playing in a big band at any age or at any level. And I think that makes our rehearsals and our performances and everything that we do really special. You know, I love the sound of jazz. I love that there's so many different side genres off of the main genre of jazz, and there's just so much exploring to be done.
Once you decided you really loved jazz music, how did you go about exploring? We've listened to some great music today by Louis Armstrong and Miles Davis, Sarah Vaughan, Duke Ellington, Stan Kenton, Daryl Reeves. So that's what we've heard so far. But how did you get started? It's a little bit overwhelming.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot out there. I am fortunate to have had great music educators in my life, and also a pretty inquisitive spirit myself to kind of seek out pieces and people that I love to listen to and to learn from as a musician.
I think a lot of musicians become very loyal to their instrument. So as a trumpet player, did you seek out great jazz trumpet players?
Yes, for sure. Yeah, I've always been listening to, you know, classic trumpet players that have really inspired the way for many professional musicians of today, and also been learning more and more about contemporary musicians that I love to listen to and love to take things from. It's kind of a jazz musician's favorite thing to do is to steal things from people they love. So always learning more and increasing my listening capacity.
Who are some of your favorite trumpet players?
Right now, I really like some of the women trumpet players I love are Bria Skomberg, Ingrid Jensen. There's so many great women that I'm really trying to focus on and take note of in my playing and in my teaching.
And let's talk about women in the world of jazz. We were talking earlier about where jazz came from, and we know that African-American musicians were the inventors of jazz. And as jazz became popular music, of course, then many other people embraced it, and musicians of all different kinds of backgrounds play jazz music. When I think about early jazz, a lot of really great jazz singers come to mind who are women, but you didn't see a whole lot of women on the bandstand unless they had a microphone to sing into. So tell me a little bit about the role that women played in early jazz.
Yes. So the narratives of jazz history that we've come to accept and which continue to be cycled through jazz education today in textbooks and teachings have notoriously excluded women and their contributions to this genre. When jazz was being developed, this was a time when women artists, specifically Black women artists, were at best not given a chance to enter the scene and at worst possibly abused and oppressed and taken advantage of. So I would love to highlight a couple women that were key to developing this genre at that time.
Yeah, please do. Tell us about some women jazz pioneers.
So the first one I would want to talk about is Mary Lou Williams. She was a genius jazz pianist, composer, and arranger, and she famously wrote and arranged songs for Andy Kirk, Benny Goodman, Louis Armstrong, and Duke Ellington, just to name a few. And those are all names that we do hear come up consistently in the jazz canon formation and in our jazz textbooks. but we don't hear about Mary Lou Williams often enough.
Well, let's listen to one of her compositions, and we can talk a little bit more about her as well. But this is called Walkin' and Swingin' by Mary Lou Williams, performed by Andy Kirk and his 12 Clouds of Joy. Just a little bit of Walkin' and Swingin', composed by Mary Lou Williams. So what do you know about Mary Lou Williams? How did she manage to make it into this world that was really a boys' club at the time?
Well, I think she just was able to make her name a name for herself as putting out incredibly progressive contributions to jazz history, and in a time where civil rights were very on the line for Black women, especially within this art form. And I think her arranging and her composing and her piano playing really speaks for itself as being a true pioneer of this genre. And she really shaped the big band sound with her compositions and her arrangements. That specific tune is probably one of the more common pieces that you might see performed by big bands still today. And it happens to be a tune that the Iowa Women's Jazz Orchestra has programmed several times, so that's why I chose that to speak about today.
When you first started exploring, looking for women in jazz, what was it that spurred you to do that searching? Because as you said earlier, I mean, these are not the names that we tend to hear when we think about early jazz music.
I think my own experience and the experience of my peers as women navigating roles as jazz instrumentalists has inspired my desire to put that at the forefront of what we're seeing in jazz education in Iowa and hopefully beyond at this time. I think there's several considerations that make it challenging for girls and women to find their voice in the jazz idiom, including the gender stereotyping of musical instruments, where the instruments that commonly make up a jazz ensemble, such as the saxophone, trumpet, trombone, drums, bass, etc., are often considered to be masculine in comparison to other instruments of a full wind band. I also think that self-efficacy plays a role in that women often tend to exude negative personal judgments about their ability to perform a creative task, such as improvisation, which is one of the most important aspects of jazz music. And that can lead to some performance anxiety. And also, the main reason I developed this group and wanted to work on this journey is to give young more female role models in the idiom that I love so much. And I think that we're on our way to doing that.
When you first started playing jazz and started getting serious about jazz as a woman trumpet player, a girl trumpet player, when you first started, what did you experience? What were some of the frustrations that you had?
Looking back, I think one of the main frustrations is that I didn't have, you know, videos of women playing jazz trumpet, or I wasn't listening to recordings of women playing jazz trumpet. I wasn't playing pieces on my music stand that were composed by women jazz composers, and I wasn't learning from women in my jazz education. I actually have never personally taken a jazz lesson or been taught by an educator who is female in my jazz education history. So I think that just kind of puts off a sort of sight that women, it's hard for us to see ourselves having a career or even just a hobby in this genre when we don't see people that look like us succeeding in it.
What led you to found the Iowa Women's Jazz Orchestra? I mean, I think it's one thing to feel a little frustrated. It's something else entirely to start a whole group. So tell me about the genesis of that.
Yeah, when I was a grad student at the University of Iowa, I was there from 2017 to 2019. I was working with my professor, Dr. Aaron Weir, and we kind of came up with this idea. We know that first of all, Iowa is such a leading state in jazz education, and it's a really, truly special place to be. We knew that there's several women in this state who are just phenomenal musicians and educators in all genres, and we knew that this was something that was important, something that I wish I would have had growing up, and a lot of the people in this ensemble also could have really benefited from, and we wanted to bring that to the stages of Iowa schools and Iowa events where we can reach school-aged musicians.
What is it like to play in an all-female orchestra?
It is so fun. I'm just thinking right now, we all miss so much our rehearsals and our performances that have been canceled recently. And it's something that I just think about often, how great it's going to be when we're able to join back together as a full ensemble. It's a supportive group. We help each other grow. Many of the people in the ensemble write or arrange music for us, and it's really special to play those pieces. It's a great experience.
Let's listen to a little more music. You also selected a song called Swing Shift, the International Sweethearts of Rhythm. Tell me why you picked this song.
The International Sweethearts of Rhythm was the first integrated all-female big band in history, formed in the 1940s when men were away, drafted to war, and also amidst the time of Jim Crow. So from my understanding, this band was initially looked at as sort of a novelty and not respected for their quality of musicianship, being an all-female organization. But time and research has allowed the women of this ensemble, the International Sweethearts of Rhythm, to come to light as really key figures in jazz history and also in politics.
All right, let's listen. A little bit of Swing Shift, the International Sweethearts of Rhythm. And Tony, right now is a tough time for all musicians. It's also a tough time for student musicians because we don't know what's going to happen with band when kids go back to school in August. And a lot of kids are practicing on their own, or maybe not practicing on their own. So I know that you, as a middle school band teacher, you work with all kinds of students. What advice do you have for student musicians who are frustrated with not being able to play with a band, and they probably didn't get to go to their summer camps and things like that? What kind of advice do you have for kids who might be on their own right now?
I would say even more important than practicing your own instrument at this time would probably be doing a lot of listening. I think as educators, we always need to highlight a diverse variety of musicians and discussions of jazz and any sort of music relation. And being able to listen to a variety of people, a variety of pieces, especially if you can relate to them, relate to these musicians in some way, is going to be really beneficial to a student's own progression, sometimes even more so, or definitely in conjunction with private practice.
So do a lot of listening. Of course, we have a lot of streaming services. We have YouTube where you can listen to music for free. But it also sounds like you think that students should take it a step further. And if they like the way something sounds, they should do a little bit of research about it?
Yeah, definitely. And if students don't quite know where to start with their listening journey, just feel free to reach out to your band director, or if they can't give you sound advice, which I'm sure, you know, they all can, but maybe they could point you into the direction of someone who can give you even further advice to allow you personally to grow in your musical journey.
And as a female musician who maybe didn't feel that welcome in the world of jazz, what is your advice for young women who are really starting out on their musical careers?
Definitely that women and anyone who identifies as a woman, your place is in the jazz genre, and you are 100% a valid person to be performing on your instrument in this genre or in any genre, doing anything you'd like to do. I hope that we can continue to provide more role models for you in your education and in your learning and listening. And I think I see some really great forward motion on this topic, and I hope it just continues to get better and that I can contribute to that as much as possible.
Toni Lefevre, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Trumpet player Toni Lefevre, she is the founder and leader of the Iowa Women's Jazz Orchestra. She's also a middle school band teacher at LaSalle Middle School in Cedar Rapids. This is Talk of Iowa. It's been Talk of Iowa Jazz Camp today. We'll be back with more summer camp next Tuesday. I'm Charity Nebbie.